Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2959. That's 2959. I'm Carol Levine. I'm Vice President of NASCAN. And tonight we're going to have a very good show. We have Michelle Bless here. And she's going to be our special guest for the night. She comes on once a month on Thursdays. And we have Annie Marges here. And we're going to have a good show. But before I get into that, excuse me, my throat is bad again. Thank you. Oh, brother. I'm going to read the mission statement. We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two different ways. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the fact that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. Number two is offering hope for healing to numerous pairs and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, those three are very, very important, the prevention, the intervention, and the recovery. It is our thought here, right here at NASCA, and a lot of other people feel the same way too at other groups, that prevention is very, very important, because if we could learn how to prevent, and that's by educating, okay, parents and also children and, you know, caregivers, whatever, as to what to look for with child abuse, okay, what to look for. And to teach your children also, too, about child abuse. This is important. This is something that should be a part of teaching children how to cross the street. Yes, don't take candy from strangers, things like that. But we know that we don't live in an innocent world. So therefore, we have to go a little bit further. And we have to do it age appropriately. On our website, that's NASCA, NASCA.org, NASCA.org, we have a whole section under prevention that that speaks about this very thing that parents need to learn to do to keep their children safer. And one of the things they do talk about is role-playing first, because many times parents are not well, they're just not educated about child abuse, or a lot of times they don't want to talk about it. They feel embarrassed about talking about the body parts. And you can do this all age appropriately, okay? Your child will let you know when you're bathing him or her. You know, they'll start asking questions. What's this? What's that? Give them the you know, the name of it. Don't say coochie, for God's sake, or cookie. With a little girl, you don't do that. And with a little boy, what would it be, hot dog? I don't know. I really don't know. But, you know, the point is this. By doing that, if you don't give them the proper names, you're doing a disservice to your child. Because if someone does try to get fresh with them, okay, they can actually say, well, he touched my penis, or she touched my penis, whatever the case might be, or he touched my vagina. God gave us a head. He gave us a neck. He gave us shoulders. If we're a little girl, we have breasts. Hopefully they grow nice and big, whatever. And then you have a stomach. And all the way down, you know, it's really funny because people are so ashamed or afraid to talk about the body parts. And that's just not right, okay? Because kids need to learn about their body. It's a part of keeping them safer. And you always let them know that they will, that you will believe them if someone comes up to them and does something inappropriate. And as far as lying is concerned, 99.5% of the time children are telling the truth. Okay? So we have all different kinds of things, you know, on the website that you can learn. It's under prevention. And then, of course, intervention, what that is learning how to speak to a child appropriately so that they can, you don't scare them away. God forbid if your child gets, you know, touched or more, you want to be that child's friend and their parent both, okay? And so then you have recovery, and that, of course, is getting help, you know, for the child. And that goes for anyone, okay? Recovery is for anyone. Those of us who've already been through that, okay, we have to recover. We have to recover. Okay, so tonight, a lot of times people are having a lot of problems with relationships. So I was asked to speak about relationships tonight. I have three different sources, and we're all going to talk about it. And, of course, you start out with the bad relationships, and then the flip side of the coin is how to get good relationships and what to look for and so forth. So the people that I actually deal with, all right, is www.insider, that's insider.com, that's one source, and then www.phillyvoice.com, that's another source. And then www, it's Healthline. That's very good. Healthline is very good. And that's .com also. So this is not starting out actually with, you know, survivors. This is actually starting out with, what it is about relationships and how to see the red flags and also to, what to look out for other than just the red flags and what to do about it. And then we go over to the other side. And by the way, they actually have listed movies that you can rent. And they're probably very good. This is 6 movies. One is called Blue Velvet. Is it Blue Velvet? No, Blue Velvet. Yeah. And the other one is Gone Girl. Another one is Enough. The other one is called Closer. The next one is Story of Kaylee. I suppose something really bad happened to her. And then the last one is My King. Now, those movies show very, very bad relationships and maybe even more than that. And they're probably a good movie to watch. And many times we don't even quite realize. Huh?
I'm sorry, I got excited. Two of them are that you can. I would definitely recommend because they were during the time of my, you know, abuse. So domestic violence.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Oh, that was Valentine. I didn't think that looked right. Can't read my own writing. I was writing so fast. It's Blue Valentine. Okay. Well, yeah, we'll talk about that, Michelle. You know, when we get to it, because, you know, it's one thing, we can sit here until we're blue in the face, you know, talking about child abuse and all this other stuff, but to actually see a movie, somehow I think it has more effect on a person, okay, more effect on a person. And, you know, yeah, it leaves a lasting impression, okay. So I think we'll get started. And yes. Is there anything that either one of you two want to talk about first?
Okay, let me start, since this is my show. Thank you, Maska, for having me. Thank you for allowing me once a month, first Thursday, and for my sister, Carol, who I want the people that's listening and everyone to know. My sister and me go, I love her. I got tears coming down my eyes. My sister, that's my sister. We love each other dearly. We connect. And what I love about her is that we connect. We piggyback on each other. And that's why I always feel that our show is such a success. Whether she comes on mine like she is on the first of the month or a first Thursday of the month or I'll just come on hers, we just piggyback on each other because it's not – we are prime examples to let you know that it's not about us. We speak and communicate the way we do to get the information out there and to share our testimony of evidence that we experience to help other people. And that is what it's about. It's not about us. It's about you. It's about the listeners. It's about the victims. It's about the survivors. But what I want to talk about, Carol, and I'm glad that you started, when you started naming these movies, Enough is really a movie that when it first came out, Jennifer Lopez starred in it, and I really connected to that story. I don't know if anyone ever seen Enough, but look it up. It's free now because it's old, but it's a powerful story and an example of how a predator looks for weakness. Now, you as a victim or even a survivor won't even know because the way that they woo you, the way that they love on you and pamper on you and give you attention 24 hours a day, that is something as us as survivors or victims, we desire that, right, Carol? But if you are a victim and you're not in the survivor mode, it's something that we desire so much, and that's that attention and that love and that comfort. You won't even see the underline of a predator. See what they do, and they'll take all the time in the world. They'll give you all that. They'll give you that attention. They'll give you that love. They'll give you that pampering. They'll hold you. They'll say all the words that you desire in your heart for a man to do for you. And I'm telling you, if they are a predator, because I'm not saying all men are the same, because guess what? All men are not the same. There are good men out here. I'm speaking specifically about a predator. They are groomers. They don't have a time limit on grooming because it depends on the subject that they have. And when I say subject, you know, the women, you know. So they will take their time and love on you and pamper on you and say all those nice things you need and buy you stuff. And just, I'm talking about you feel like you Cinderella. But once you fall in love with them, if they are a predator now, I'm only speaking if the man is a predator, once you fall deeply in love with him, then the next stage is he will show himself to you. He will show himself to you. That real person will come out. And I have met women that lost their lives. I have met women who have survived it and could tell their story. And I thank God that I am one of the ones that can do that.
Yeah.
What I want to share is that I was in a relationship with a man that he wooed me. He pursued me heavily, and he was that knight in shining armor. He would jet fly me, you know, to different places around the world and pamper me and woo me. And, oh, my God, I thought I was Cinderella. And let me tell you how long this person was. And keep in mind, I didn't know anything about a groomer. I didn't know anything about a predator, okay? Not as far as in that particular situation. I knew about predators growing up being sexually assaulted or being beaten on, you know? So to get back to what I'm saying, the first year he pursued me, The first 6 months it was hard, and then once I decided to be exclusive, he continued on his pursuing. He never stopped. He never changed what he presented to me. Then the second year, we got engaged. And watch this. He stayed consistent. He never changed what he showed me. But the day I said I do, and we came home from that honeymoon, I felt like it was like a Jekyll and Hyde. Mm-hmm. The man that pursued me and wooed me for the first 2 years, the first year of wooing, the second year engagement, the third year get married, mm-hmm. I felt like I was standing in a house with a stranger. I'm like, who is this? I was in shock, yet devastated, yet hurt and dismayed.
Mm-hmm.
And because he beat me down with the words, it flipped. Well, guess what, you guys? I was a victim because before I even met him, I was a victim, and I wanted love. I wanted to forget about what I endured. I was never healed from my pain, from my wounds, from the child abuse, from the domestic, none of that, okay? So mm-hmm. I was shocked, and that's what they do. They catch you in that shock moment, and they come hard. And he would say, no, ain't nobody going to want you but me. Ain't nobody going to love you the way I love you. Or after he spit your lip or hit you in your eye. And then he come in with gifts. And then you go, well, you know what? You start remembering how he first came at you. And then he said, well, this happened the first time. It's not like when I was sexually abused as a child for 6 years from my grandfather and nobody knew. You start going back to stuff and then you start giving excuses, which you don't even know you're giving excuses.
Mm-hmm.
See, the one thing that I push so heavily, love don't hurt. Remember
that's
that.
Right.
Love don't hurt. I don't care how many times, but I love you. Let me tell you something. That is the most number one con artist and a predator in their book. When they say they love you and then you give excuses, let me tell you something. They don't love you. They saw you coming. See, they can smell it. They know when they see a woman and they see that she's a victim or she went through some sort of abuse. That's what they feed on, and that's when they want to put you in their box. You're not a human being anymore. You are their property. You become a property. You have no say-so. You have no rights. And then what they do that's so low, they abuse you, and then they'll go buy gifts and have sex with you, and they'll say in your face, I'm making love to you. I'm so sorry. I love you. All lies. Again, love does not hurt. So for whoever's listening via the show or in the chat, when a man hurts you, whether it's mentally, emotionally, physically, that's not love.
Mm-mm.
That's not love. Okay, Kara, I'm going to let you say some things, and you know we're going to come back to it because, you know, this is my pet peeve right here, that domestic violence thing. So, you know, go ahead and chime in, and we have our sister Anna who's listening if you want to say something. Because I got so much to say, and I had to stop myself.
I know you do. And you know what? That's fine.
My sister in.
All the things, let me say something. All the things that you're saying are the things that I have here in front of me. And I'm thinking to myself, my God. And I'm thinking to myself, my God. He's like my first husband. My first husband was like mm-hmm. that, too. And when he came home from the service, he started to beat me. And before that, and I don't even know why, he couldn't believe that me, the biker chick, could stay home for 2 years, whatever it was, a little over 2 years, and not cheat on him. But you see, the problem was, Michelle, he cheated on me. Okay?
Mm.
I don't know. A lot of guys cheat on their wives and their girlfriends when they're in the service. I hate to say that. But they do.
Yeah.
And I'm not condoning it at all. But I'm just mm-hmm. saying. So he was so guilty, and when I told him, I'm yelling in the backyard of my mother's house, okay? She had a huge yard, and we were quite a distance away from the house. I don't think she even heard it. So he said, hit me, hit me, hit me as hard as you can. So I went, oh, okay. I was mad at him anyway. Ba-ba-ba-boom, I gave him a good one. He said, again, ba-ba-boom, again, ba-ba-boom, three times in the face and around the head. Now, that doesn't change anything, but it made him feel better because he knew that he had done wrong and I hadn't. He believed me.
Mm-hmm.
So what was our relationship after that? It didn't really have anything too much to do with that. I know how guys can be, and I'm, again, not condoning. They're young.
But go back to what, I want to go
19,
back to what you said.
20.
Let me ask you a question. When he started beating you, Carol, did he do that stage of beating you and then, oh, I'm sorry, or bring you a gift or have sex with you and say, you know I didn't mean it, you know I love you, stuff like that? Did you go through that?
No, not so much because, he just didn't do that. See, he wooed me very badly. I mean, like in the beginning of our relationship, he took me to the city, which I love. He took me to French fancy restaurants. I have French in me. We ate French food. Took me to Italian restaurants. I have that in me. We had Italian food, whatever. Always in the city because he knew I loved the city. And, you know, we hung out. He had a bike. He had two bikes. He had a Harley. He had an Indian. And we both drank. I'm an alcoholic, too.
Okay.
I just don't drink. Okay?
Okay.
And my last drink was really in the 80s, okay? And so my fingers were puffing. My kidneys were pounding. And I knew that I had to stop or I was going to die. It's as simple as that. So I chose to live. I had a little boy by him. And he had to get to know his son because Uncle Sam got a hold of him. The first thing he got, he tore up. The second one was a nasty note. He didn't tear that one up. And, yes, he went into the service. He didn't go to Vietnam. He went to Korea, of all places. And there was no action in Korea, a little bit by the DMZ, but nothing really to talk about. So I don't consider him having PTSD of any kind, not like the guys that went to Vietnam. And I had a lot of friends that went to Vietnam. And I'd sit there and watch the roll thing every night to see if their name was on it. It was horrifying. So the point is, he had a good time over there, not a bad time. And he came home a maniac. This is not the man that I married. The minute he walked through the door, the first thing he said was, American women are spoiled. And you see, over in Korea, he was down in South Korea, he was in Busan. And, okay, yes, Annie, you're going to like this. They ate cockroach soup. Yes, they did. That was considered a delicacy.
Oh, God. Okay,
that was considered a delicacy. I've got news for you.
Yeah, right.
And the women, they didn't have bars of soap, all right? I don't know how they kept themselves clean. If they were women of high stature, they had the bars of soap. Okay, there was all this stuff going on. But that doesn't make it right. And don't come home to your country, the United States of America, and down us because I'm able to take a shower and have, you know, all kinds of soap and all the things that we do. You know, so he changed. He was like a Dr. Jekyll and a Mr. Hyde. And I gave him three chances. I had to keep going back to the house. That made me mad. I had no money. I had no car. He wouldn't let me work. The guys are going to look at you. See? Control, control, control.
That's what they do. Exactly.
And if that's all what's in here. And, oh, my goodness. Hold on a second. Okay. So, you know, they control their women. They don't want you really to have friends because you're going to talk about them, aren't you? You know,
absolutely.
And they don't want, they try to keep you away from family members. I was living in Morris County.
Mine moved me out of state.
There you go. Yeah.
Took me to a whole different state, several states over. I knew no one, so I get that. Yeah.
Annie, what about you? Well, tell us a little bit of something about you.
Well,
did you go through any
history? Yes. my history of relationships is pretty sad. I am now happily single, and I plan to stay that way. As a,
I think
as
that's
a child.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry she said that. I'm planning to stay that way, okay?
Yeah, well, I can hear that. I hear it. Go ahead.
Well, I was abused by my father for several, many years while I was really young. And I went from there to a boyfriend who raped me and got me pregnant. It was one of those date rapes. It was like, oh, come on, honey, come on, you know. Anyway,
wow.
Got me pregnant. So there I was at 18. So that was pretty traumatic. And then I ended up marrying that guy, believe it or not, because he was the father of the child. And it was, I knew, I dated and stuff, and nobody wanted me. I had a child, you know? So I ended up marrying him, and it was a very abusive relationship. So many of the things that you were saying happened, although not physically, but emotionally and verbally abusive, and to the children, too. And so I divorced him and was happily single until I met my second husband, who was just as abusive as the first one. And I stayed with him for 16 years.
Oh, God.
So, I know.
Isn't it funny how we do that? Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, it was so bad. Like, when he go to work, he would put locks on all the cabinets. The pantry, we keep the food, and he'll put locks on the refrigerator door, and I couldn't eat until he came home. And then I would have to crawl to him like a dog. Oh, it was crazy. And I know it was because of the grace of God that I still have my mind. Because what they do, they break you. They take away your self-esteem, and then they'll break you to make you as if not only that you're nothing, but that they will program your mind to believe that no one else will love and want you but them. And then once that's implanted, and that's real, and I know you know what I'm talking about, Carol. And y'all, they'll make you feel that, well, okay, you know what? He's right. Ain't nobody going to want me. Ain't nobody going to love me. So I'm just going to deal with this. You're going to feel that's all you got. Oh, they're so, your predators are so manipulating and so conning. It's not just
for
us also being survivors of sexual child abuse. That we have predators that do that. But we're talking about these predators, too, in domestic violence. The same. They got them ones that the men that are, and I'm going to say some, because I ain't going to say all, because some men that abuse women, you know, in domestic violence, and it's just the women. Sometimes you have predators that not only abuse the women in domestic violence, but the children get sexually assaulted and all that too. But in some cases, there are abusers who just get their kicks off having control over a woman, period. They shoot down their self-esteem to absolutely nothing. Then they'll tell you you're ugly, and you believe it. And it might be some listeners saying, well, that really? Yes, because before I got healed, before I started loving myself, what I'm sharing with you is where I used to be when I was broken and lost and miserable and suicidal and all that. I felt so much unloved. And the worst part, the ones who feel so much unloved, they didn't even love themselves. I didn't even love me. I felt worthless. I felt ugly. I felt unwanted. And I felt like I deserved what happened to me. As an adult, I felt that same way when I was being mistreated and molested as a child and abused. So it was just being from one abuse to another. But God.
You see, that's what happens, though. I want to say something here. Now, something you just said, which is one of the things on this list here, it says also digital monitoring or clocking. Like when you would go out, if they dared to let you out, right? If you went to the store to go shopping, they're watching the clock. Okay?
Oh, yeah, time limit. Come in late.
Oh, yeah.
Come
and
in
you
the
come
house
home
late.
5 minutes late. Yeah. Who are you with?
God.
What did you do? And it turns into a total disaster. And then the digital
They'll beat you down. They'll beat you down verbally first, scaring you freaking to death for hours, and then they'll beat you. Oh, my God. Yes.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, it's real. And the digital monitoring, I mean, I've heard of cases where they had cameras in apartments and so forth.
Yeah.
And to see what you, to watch your every action. This is crazy. And yet this is what these people do. And this is what they do to we, the women, because you see, especially we might as well get into the whole thing. Especially when we are a child and we're so abused as a child, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We have already lost our self-esteem.
Absolutely.
Because we come from families who are telling us that we're no good, we're stupid, we'll never amount to anything.
We don't have any self-esteem.
No, you
By
don't.
By the time we become an adult, there is no self-esteem. There is none. Now, at that point,
That's right.
A child being abused to a teenager to a young adult or an adult, you in that space of desiring love, you already broke down. And this is what I want the listeners who are victims who have not been healed yet. You haven't even been healed as a child if you went through abuse as a child. Because by the time you become a teenager, a young lady, and a full adult woman, you are seeking love. Everything else is broken. And that's when those men come as those knight of shiny armors, as we call them, but they freaking predators.
That's
what they love. Predators look for women who are broken. Oh, and they'll sit there and say, tell me what happened to you. They taking notes. In their mind, they want to know all that. Oh, you went through all that. Oh, I got you now, because they know the difference from a woman telling her story, but she's healed behind it, versus a woman telling her story and she's still broken. She's just battered, abused, low self esteem, and they'll come in after they groom you, and get you to fall in love with them and break you all the way down.
That's right. That's exactly right.
I know women who went and took pills while their husband was at work. They couldn't take it no more. They would sneak out and see a doctor and get some pills and do an overdose. The man who abused them come in, they dead in the bed. And it just take me back to how many times I tried to commit suicide. I didn't want to live. Come on now. This is real.
This is what we're here for.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I had suicidal ideations. When I was a teenager.
Okay.
I have a scar right on my wrist to prove it. You know, but those were ideations. I actually tried that time. All I had to work with was a piece of glass. Now, see how I said that? All I had to work with was a piece of glass.
Mm.
I wanted to die so badly when I was 17. I'd gotten raped again. I was pregnant. I lost a baby. But I would have gone into the unwed mother's house. My mother used to say to me, if you ever get pregnant, I'm putting you there. She hated me. But anyway, it happened. I got pregnant because I got raped. And I thought to myself, all these friends, I had friends that beat the crap out of him. This guy, I was at a party. And they beat the living daylights out of him. That was a little bit of justification. But someone like that, you see, it's better to get them off the streets. They belong in jail. And so anyway, they knew better. They knew that I wasn't going to, you know, mess around with this guy. He just simply took advantage of me. They went on a beer run. They were gone. And when it came back, I'm trying to pull my clothes on, and it was a disgusting mess. But anyway, the point is this. You know, the point is this. You know, I didn't feel flattered. I got raped again, okay? He's telling me I'm pretty,
right.
I'm this, I'm that, I'm this, I'm that. But then all of a sudden he overpowered me. And I don't care how strong you are as a woman. I tried to tell someone this the other night. I don't care how strong you are as a woman. I do believe that, you know, any man who's strong also can overpower you. I mean,
yes.
You can know all different kinds of martial arts. Now, I have a couple of friends that might disagree with me on this, and I don't know, I'd have to ask them more about it. But the point is, I only know a little bit of martial arts. I don't know a whole bunch of martial arts, okay? But because Marty was a brown belt, I don't know why I didn't turn into a black belt. That didn't make sense to me. I don't really care. But the point is this, you cannot get a guy off of you if you're not strong enough, and that's what happened.
If you're not strong, now watch this. I'm a third-degree black belt today. But I remember when I got my first black belt, it was right before I turned 16, before I went in the military. And one of my girlfriends invited me to go with her to meet a guy, and she didn't want to go by herself. And so I said, okay. So we go over to this house. She see her friend. They hug each other. And it was another guy there. So I'm not paying no attention because I'm like, I'm with my girl. So then she goes, okay, me and my dude, we're going to go get some stuff for us. I'll be right back. And I'm like, well, let me go with you. She's like, girl, you fine. You all right. This is my piece and all that. But she didn't even know him. She told me this later. She told me this later on after the fact. This is what happened. When they left and she went with her dude. So this guy, I mean, he's staring at me hard. He was 6'5". I'm 5'9".
Wow.
And
I'm 5'2".
Staring at me, asking questions about me. And I'm like, look, just, you know, I don't mean no harm, but just leave me alone until my friend comes. Next thing I know, he jumped up and grabbed me. I tried to maneuver my way out, but he threw me over his shoulders, took me upstairs in a room, slammed me on the bed, and he got me down where I couldn't get out from under him, and he tried to rape me. And I can't, and to this day, I promise, I cannot remember what I said to him. I don't know if I mentioned what happened as a child. I don't know what it was. But when I got to talking, he took my shorts off of me already. And I'm looking at him, he was going to put his thing in me. And I said something to him, and he stopped. And then I was screaming, and he put a pillow over my face. He was like, look, I'm not going to touch you. I'm not going to touch you now. Just stop screaming. And so I stopped, and he moved the pillow, and he said, I'm sorry. He said, I'm sorry, just like that, and got off of me. I ran downstairs, went straight out the door, and I sat outside, but I was away from the house, and I didn't know which way my friend was coming, but she pulled up in the car, went in, and I was across the street hiding. And when I came across the street coming in, I'm hearing her screaming, like, where is my friend, you know? And then I looked at her, and I said, This so-and-so right here tried to rape me. And he was like, no, I didn't. No. I said, yes, you did. And so his friend was like, are you serious right now? You know, went up to him and was pushing him and stuff. And the dude that tried to rape me now was 6'5". So he was taller than my girlfriend's friend. But they were upset. Yeah. And so I was crying. And of course, you know, I went out back. I mean, I didn't come all the way in the door. Like, the door was wide open. I was standing, like, at the door, you know. So I was walking out, and my girlfriend was coming behind me, and she kept walking with me. Her boyfriend, he ended up getting in the car, trying to come behind us, saying, look, I give you a ride. I'm like, I'm not getting in your car. I feel set up. Because I was so distraught. And then I kept telling my girlfriend, how could you leave me there when I said to you I wanted to go with you? And she was like, well, my boyfriend wanted to introduce you to his friend. I said, that's not a friend. But I saw that, I realized by looking at her expression and how she was crying and how hurt she was, she didn't know anything about that. And then, two, that she didn't try to defend him. She was cussing her boyfriend out, like, I'm done with you. She grabbed me. She wouldn't leave my side. So that's when I knew, okay, this is for real, because I felt like I was set up. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I felt when we got away from there, I was getting ready to do something to her. Like, I was so upset. But this man, keep in mind, I'm not even 16 yet. He was a grown man.
Mm-hmm.
6'5", a grown man. He could have raped me. He could have smothered me and say, she stopped breathing on anything. That was just, even though I wasn't serving God then, I was an atheist, I know now that it was God who protected me during that time. It could have went real ugly. You know what I'm saying? And then to find out they say he just got out of prison, oh, my God, girl, it was crazy. It was crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was just so
distraught. We've had some wild experiences.
I can tell you. Go ahead.
Annie, let's see what Annie's thinking about all of this.
Oh, wow. Yes, just, I was raped a couple of times myself, and it's just amazing to me that you hardly ever meet a woman who wasn't, you know, and it makes me really angry that people think they can rape you. Why do they think they can rape us? Why do they think that's okay?
Annie, you know what's so shocking, Annie? I'm finding out, and I'm still finding out, it's so many women that I felt like it was only a few of us that happened to, and that more women today that kept that secret, that if they experienced that, that like they were ashamed to share that they were raped, you know, or just something they didn't want to talk about, you know. It was like a big hush-hush. Now, Kara, I want to say something to you. I know you heard of this. Do you know back in our time, like, it was known for uncles and cousins to mess with their nieces and, you know, whatever. And then
they
would say that's something that they normally happen to. Let me tell you something. My dad didn't play that. Or my mom. Mm-hmm. So I remember when my uncle tried to, I'll never forget, oh, my God. I'm closing my eyes right now. And I can remember it from yesterday. I was about, I want to say, either 13 or 14. And my youngest sister, I'm 5 years older than her. So that means she must have been, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 or, no, I think 6 or 7 she was, or 8, 7 or 8,
hold
something
on,
like
Michelle,
that.
Hold on, Michelle. I just want to acknowledge someone. There's a 513 area code. I'll get right to you as soon as Michelle tells her story.
I invited someone. You can go see if they want to talk. They might just be listening, but you can let them know they can talk. That might be one of my elders in the church. So go ahead.
513 area code? Who am I speaking to?
Jan, if that's you, you can push 1 so you can talk. And if you don't push 1, then he doesn't want to listen.
Well, maybe that's what the – yeah, go ahead. Yeah. So go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, so I was about 13 or 14, and my uncle was with my mom, one of my mom's brothers. It was 22 of them. So he was at our house, and it was some music playing. And we were just, it was fast music. We were all just dancing together, having fun. And then the next song he went to go put on, because by that time, you know, we're in our era now, you know, songs would come on one after another. But back then, we're talking about in the 60s, you had to literally take the song off and put another song on. So when the fast song went off, he put on a slow song. And then he started standing there grinding and stuff, talking about, come here, and, you know, let's dance. And so even though it was like, no, slow dancing is when two people that's in love or something dance. So I knew that was wrong. I knew it wasn't right. So he grabbed my sister, right? He was trying to come close to her, and I grabbed her. I said, you're not going to do that. And so he grabbed me, and he put his arms around my waist and pulled me into him. I felt the print of his dingy thing, and I screamed, like, because I knew it was wrong. And my mama said, "Oh, Francis." No, that's my first name, because, you know, Michelle is my middle name. Francis, you okay? And I let out a scream. My mama come running across the other side of the house, and so my uncle was standing there giggling, and she was like, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Mama, you hear that song?" And she was like, "Yeah." She was like, "Well, he pulled my," you know, and I said my sister's name. her up to slow dance with him. And then he grabbed me and had me around his waist and he held me, Mama. Well, my mama looked at her brother and went up to him. And the first thing he did was he slapped him so hard. Girl, he was black as a frying pan. I promise I thought I seen white. You know what I'm saying? And she said, "You touched my daughter, your niece?" And he was like, "I was just playing. I wanted to show her how to slow dance." No, that's nasty. And you sick. And get out of my house. Just like that. Just like that.
Well, at least she stood up for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
She stood up for you.
Yeah,
Michelle.
My mom did. But keep in mind now, I was being molested starting at the age of 6 to 12. I was still being molested by my grandfather for years. And I never told my mom enough. So, like, I'm like, you know what I mean? So, I don't know. I think from all that, I was already being physically abused by my dad, mentally abused by my dad, verbally being abused by my dad. Then I was being raped by my grandfather from starting at the age of 6 all the way to 14. Mm-hmm. So by this time, no, I'm sorry, 6 to 12. So by this time, it had to be, you know what, I got my age wrong when my uncle was trying to teach me how to slow dance because I was still being molested by my dad. I mean, not my dad. My dad never molested me, but my grandfather. So I must have been 11 going on 12. And that was still going on with my grandfather. And it was just so much of the things that I was doing with him. I'm like, you know. But my mom stood up for me. And from that, the point I'm trying to make is when I saw my mother offended me, I wanted to tell her so bad what my grandfather was doing. But I kept remembering what my grandfather said. If you tell your dad, he's going to jail. So in the era of where I was in my life, and we're talking about the 60s, my dad was the breadwinner for the household. So it was like, oh, my God, if I tell, my dad's going to go to jail because he's going to go in for murder because he's going to kill my grandfather. But where is that going to leave me and my siblings and my mom?
All right, stop right there for a second. Stop right there. Do you see what you just said? Now, you're the victim, and you're thinking, and not that you shouldn't, of course you're going to be thinking, but you're very concerned about what's going to happen to the rest of them. This happens a lot, Michelle. It does. You see?
Yes. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Carol, when you shared your stuff, and you would say, but I didn't want to do this because it would have happened this, that, and the other. You see us as victims, and we were little girls.
Yeah.
We were little girls. I'm getting emotional. I'm sorry. We were little girls as victims.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we were that mature enough to know to want to protect other members of the family against the pedophile who was abusing us as little girls.
Now, you see, I'm different there, though, Michelle. I didn't care.
Okay.
I was like this, and I want to ask Annie. With me, because I don't know if she told my people that, you know,
okay, I'm sorry, that was my story, but go ahead.
No. Oh, okay. Well, with me, I was the opposite. I wanted to tell. My uncle started sexually abusing me to 6 to 7 and a half. And he told me he'd kill me, and I knew he would because he killed my aunt's bird right in front of me. I knew it was him. And that was to intimidate me. In fact, you brought that up once. That was to intimidate me. That's right. Now, I wanted to tell on him, but I knew that he was capable of murder.
Wait, you say he killed your aunt in front of you?
No, not my aunt, her bird. Her bird.
Oh, okay, girl. That's still devastating
her
for a
bird.
Child, though, that you didn't.
But she loved that bird, and still in all, he killed that bird. That's to show me that when I say I'm going to kill, I can kill. He poisoned it. I saw him put stuff in the bird feed. So, all right, okay. So that's why I kept quiet for a year and a half. But then... all of a sudden, it got to the point where I didn't care anymore. Just like you said, you didn't want to live. I didn't want to live. I didn't want to live at the age of 7 and a half. I didn't know where my mother lived. I had no phone number for her. And my so-called father was out in California. I had no one.
Let me ask you something,
girl. Except for one drunk
aunt.
What's that?
Let me ask you something. This is a question for you and also Sister Annie. When I was a little girl and the sexual abuse was so heavy, and on top of the sexual abuse was the physical. I'm talking about being beaten and stuff. And then the other abuses, like keep in mind, all at the same time, so I'm being sexually abused, I'm being verbally, mentally abused, and then on top of that, I'm being shock treatment abused from watching my mom and my siblings getting beat too. All this is going on, I'm a little girl. I have experienced, and I know what it's called now, I'm not going to say, this is not a, you know, a religious show or anything like that, but it got to the point where I literally, my spirit came out, listen, my spirit came out of my little body, and I would stand in a corner and watch my grandfather do the things that he was doing to me. I didn't feel nothing until I went back into my body. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Because I had an out-of-body experience once.
So you have experienced that?
Yeah, one time. I was 22.
Elaborate on that, please. What happened?
Okay. I'm lying on the couch. I'm reading a book, heavy into reading books during that time. And I'm in the middle of a sentence. And all of a sudden, I felt like my whole innards went up and just about touched the ceiling without actually touching. And then I heard a voice say, "What the hell is she doing here? It's not her time yet." And then the other voice was going, because I couldn't understand it. But because that voice, that didn't sound godly to me, honey. Oh, no. Okay. I mean, what the hell is she doing here? Now, I admit I was a rough kid, and I did some rough things. And I think that was God's way of saying, "Hey, Carol, you know, you better straighten up and straighten out."
But let's go back to that. You skipped over something. You skipped over something. You said you heard a voice that said, "Why in the hell is she here?" Is that what you heard?
Yes.
And then what else did you hear?
Well, the other voice, there were two people. The other voice, I couldn't understand what he was saying. He was mumbling. So I knew that, okay, look, I'm a rough kid. I'm a tough kid. I started watching domestic violence at the age of four, before I even got put in that house of horrors at the age of six. I saw blood, teeth flying, all kinds of stuff. And, you know, the point is, I think that, you know, people like us can have out-of-body experiences. We've had other people on the show
absolutely.
That speak the same way, you know? I ain't talking about that, honey.
I experienced it. Can't nobody,
well, me too.
One thing that I love, can't nobody take away our experiences. It doesn't matter to me whether a person believe it or not. I know what I went through. I know what I saw. Okay?
That's right. I know what I experienced. Annie, did you ever have anything like that?
You know, I did when I was hospitalized once. I sort of dreamed that I had walked away down the hall toward the light, and some people there said, no, you have to go back. And then I
Not
was
your
back.
Time. Ooh, hallelujah.
Yeah.
What time, how old were you?
I was probably 20.
That was God, sweetie. It wasn't your time. Thank you, Jesus. It wasn't your time. I felt that when
well, maybe,
you said that.
Maybe
she
was a better girl than me because the other one said hell. I'm telling you. Let me tell you something,
no,
Michelle.
No, Carol. That was the enemy
well,
trying
I don't
to take
know.
Your
I don't know.
In.
But I'm going to tell you something. I got up off that couch when I felt my body go back. I got off that couch, and I was still smoking cigarettes at that time. I went through a pack and a half, and I was scared to go to bed. I was scared to go to sleep.
How old were you?
And I wasn't reading a book anymore either. I was just pacing. I was 22.
Okay.
And I don't know. It was all crazy. And I'll never forget that experience. I had another one that was a good experience for me. My mother allowed for us. We always had huge houses. I live in a small ranch house, but she had huge houses. And so anyway, she would allow for someone of my friends. We were, you know, we were like the misfits. We weren't the hoods, like Maria, okay, on West Side Story. But we were the misfits.
Wow.
There's another movie out, The Misfits. We didn't fit in.
Right.
We weren't quite hoody-hoody, and we weren't quite goody-goody, okay? We were in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, she said, Carol, let's not go to school today. We're on the school bus going to school. I said, what are you talking about? We're already on the bus. She says, yeah, but when we get off the bus, let's go somewhere else. I said, where? She said, let's go down to the Neck of Newark. I said, what do you want to go to the Neck of Newark for? I've been there.
How old are you?
15.
Okay,
I was 15. So anyway, so I said, why on earth would you want to go to the Neck of Newark? I know the people. I know some bad people down there. I don't want to go back down there. She says, I have a surprise for you. And I said, well, I don't have any money. I had my lunch money. That was it. She says, I have money.
Right.
And sometimes her parents would send money over, and I guess my mother would give it to her. So I believed her, all right? So we get to the Neck of Newark. We get off the bus. And so anyway, she we're walking around. It's so bitterly cold out. Oh, my God. And in those days, we didn't wear jeans to school. Oh, no, honey. We had to wear skirts, all right? And and those terrible, disgusting-looking saddle shoes. You girls remember the saddle shoes?
Yes, yep. I know. Yes.
Oh, were they ugly. Ugly, okay?
And you wear
Bobby socks or something. Really stupid-looking.
Right.
And the skirts had poodles on them. What was the skirt with a poodle on? It made no sense to me. But anyway, it was disgusting. But anyway, we were cold is the point. So we go into this donut shop, and I took my lunch money. I bought a cup of coffee and a donut, and I realized she didn't have any more money than I did. I said, what have you done? Now we're going to get back home. What have you done? She says, we're not going back home. She says, I left a bad home to go into your home because it had no boundaries. But she says, now I see that your home is worse than my home. So I said, you want to go back to your home? I didn't want to stay in the Neck of Newark. So she says, no, we're here now. So we're walking around, We end up by the bus depots, you know, where all the buses are. And I said, Marilyn, I want to go home. I want to go home. It's in my book, but her real name is Marilyn. And so this guy approaches us. He approaches us. And he shows us a card that said PAL, Police Athletic League, right? That's what you think. He was a phony baloney. He didn't work with the Police Athletic League. He was a pedophile.
He was a pedophile.
Now, we're 15 years old. There's another name for the ones that like the teenagers. I used to have it in front of me. I'll have to get it and put it there. But he wanted teenage girls because he wanted to put us out in traffic, you know, us out on the street. And I said, no way am I staying here. I don't like this place. I've been here too often, and this is a bad place to be. He says, okay, I'll put you on a bus. He put the both of us on the bus, but he came too.
Okay.
Now, my friend is in the back of the bus with him, and they're smooching and all this stuff. And I go, holy crap. I sat right behind the bus driver. I knew there was something wrong, but I didn't know what it was. So we get off the bus, freezing cold weather, and she got back on the bus with him. She disappeared down the Neck of Newark. The police couldn't find her. I had a complete description of him. I could give it to the police. And then we all thought after several weeks that she was probably dead. Okay.
She was gone for several weeks?
Oh, yeah. We thought she was dead. So I got down on my hands and knees in front of my praying window, as I used to call it, in my bedroom.
Come on now.
Because my mother was an atheist, and if she came in and caught me praying, she either hit me in the head or make me wish I was dead because she, you know, made fun of me for weeks. So anyway, I'm sitting by the window praying, and I felt this hand on my shoulder.
Yes, Lord.
And it was pitch black in there. And my door had a lock on it. And I thought, my God, did I forget to lock the door? My mother's standing here with her hand on me. I spun around, totally frightened. Not of God.
No one there.
frightened of my mother. I turn around, and there's nobody there. I run to the switch on the wall. There was no one in that room except for God.
Jesus, hallelujah. That was God.
Now, the next day she was found. Yes, she was a mess. They had her pumped up high on heroin. Yeah. You know, she had scarring, all kinds of stuff. She was a mess. They weren't feeding her properly. She was a mess. But she was found, and she went back home.
Wow.
So
that was God, honey. He heard your prayer.
Oh, yeah.
He heard your prayer.
So you see, I do believe in angels. I do. I don't know if it's God or an angel. But, you know, the point
angels,
is...
God has angels, honey. They're real. They're real.
Yes. Oh, I believe... If you walk around my house, you ask my friends, they will say she's got angels everywhere. She's got angels everywhere. I've got my curio. I've got them on my wall. I've got them... I believe in angels. Okay?
They're real.
So anyway, that was a good experience. But you see, this is what happens. Kids disappear all the time.
All the time.
They disappear because they come from terrible homes or they're in foster care. Whatever the case might, or maybe they're just pulled off the street and kidnapped and raped like I was, like Bill was.
Bill, they knew
he was going. But with me, I was kidnapped and raped right off the street. And we were going to go to Coney Island. I love the city. And my stupid father, as I knew him to be, came out back home from California. He was there not long. But he came over to visit, and we lived in Staten Island at the time. And he wanted to take us over to Coney Island, my brother and I. And he'd done that several times, and I really liked Coney Island. So anyway, that's where we went. And but not this time, honey, because, you see, my father was very, very late. And I went down the end of the driveway. This car pulled over. And this just shows you, these pedophiles, how cunning they are. It was still warm out. We started school, but it was still warm out. And so his window was down on the passenger side. And he's still behind the driver's seat there, the wheel. And he's whispering to me. I can't hear him. So I'm getting closer to the car, right?
Of course.
So he opens up the door and pulled me in. There you go. So that's how I got kidnapped and raped, and I was one of 14, and I write about it online all the time. That man was caught, got 3 years. That's it, 3 years, but was out in a year and a half. No justice.
You know, when you mentioned the kidnapping and stuff, that remind me of during a time when my daughter was, I had her at 23, so I was 26 when she was 3 years old, and I was keep in mind during this time I'm not healed. I was a young woman who was very depressed, suicidal, lost, and I was working and I took a leave of absence. I felt like I was going crazy, right? And so my mom was like, you know what? I called my sister down in Cleveland. She said you can come down there, you know, and take, you know, be down there for a couple of weeks, get yourself together, you know, because during that time, me and my mom was very close, you know, and I was telling her, like, I'm tired of living. It was just crazy. So I took a leave of absence, and I paid for a Greyhound bus ticket and got on the bus. And all I remember is that when I stepped off the bus, I didn't even make it to go in the door in the inside of the Greyhound because this person came behind me and hit me in the back of my head and took me. And when I came to, I was blindfolded. I was handcuffed. My arm was stretched out, and my arms were handcuffed on both sides. I was stretched out. My legs were handcuffed. At the bottom, I remember my ankles handcuffed. I couldn't move. And but I knew I was naked because, you know, you feel a breeze. You know you got no clothes on. And so I was kidnapped and held against my will for. Well, I found out after I had to. I don't want to move too fast on this, but I know I was there for days, and all I know is that I was constantly being raped by this man. you know. Oh. And so I remember, like, because he would come in and then he would feed me, like, open your mouth, and he would give me food. And so I went from being afraid to survivor mode at this time. Because keep in mind, days of blindfold, and I'm 26 years old, and all that kept running in my mind was what happened to me as a little girl when I was 2 years old, what happened to me when I was six, what happened to me when I was nine, what happened to me. So I just went to this survivor mode. So I seduced this man that I don't even know you look like. And I made this man believe that after all what happened to me, like, I just want to be with him because even though, you know, he's having sex with me, I didn't say rape. I said, you're having sex with me because you want me. Okay, you desire me. You know what? I just want to be with you. And he was like, what? Like, he, you know, I seduced his mind. This fool fell for it. And I said to him, I said, you know, unhandcuff me. I'm not going to go anywhere. And he said, well, I'm going to unhandcuff you, but I'm not going to take the blindfolds off because I don't want you to see me. So I said, fine. But I never showed any evidence of wanting to get away. So he ended up trusting me. And he was like, by this time, I was having bubble baths and all this. And he was still raping me every day, all day. And then I said, well, why don't you get me something nice so I can put on something sexy for you? And then, you know, you can take the blindfolds off, and then I would be like your Bonnie and Clyde because I want to be with you forever. He said, you promise? And I said, yeah. So this fool left to go to a store to buy me some lingerie. So when I heard his car go pull off, I took the blindfolds off. I don't know how long I was there at this point. But everything was absolutely blurry, but I knew I was naked. So I couldn't focus because my eyes were blindfolded for so long. But I saw that I was in a room, and, of course, there's a bed, and there's this glass patio door. So I took the sheets. It was several sheets on the bed, and I took one sheet and wrapped it around me and tied it, and I took the other sheet and put it over my head, and I went from one end of the wall. And I said, the God that my mama served, because at 26, I was still an atheist. But my mother loved Jesus, right? So I was like, the God that my mama serves, please help me get me out of here. And I ran through that glass door. That patio door shattered. And I was outside. I was wet and bloody. I walked through. It was, you know, again, my eyes are still blurry, but I knew I was in this wooded area. I just kept walking. And finally, it seemed like it took forever, but finally I was able to get to a road. When I came out of the trees in the woods, there was a long road, and I started walking the road. And then this car come out, and I'm waving, like, please help me. And so the man, you know, I got to the door, he opened the door, he let me in, and he was like, oh, my God, what happened to you? And I said, oh, I was, you know, kidnapped and, you know, held against my will, and I'm able to get away. Can you please take me to the police or something, you know, or the hospital? And so as we drive, and I said that, you know what he said? He said, well, shoot, since you were raped, I might as well get me some. And he pulled over, he raped me. And then he came out of his car, opened his door, grabbed me and threw me out of his car and took off. And by this time, I totally snapped. I knew at that moment I had a, what they call it,
I had a meltdown, the opposite,
not a meltdown. It's something worse than that, a nervous breakdown. I totally lost
nervous,
it.
Oh, nervous breakdown.
Yeah. So I'm staggering, but I'm still in on this road, and I'm walking down. And then I don't know how long I was walking, but at this point I was saying, I call on the God that served my mom, that my mom loved, and this is what you do to me. And I was saying stuff like that. And then all of a sudden I saw this car racing towards me, and then the lights came on. There were blue, red, and white lights. It was the police lights. That's all I remember. When I woke up, I was in the hospital. They had a guard at my door so many police officers. And during this time, and this is on record, this is happening in Cleveland, and then I'm going to stop right there, and I want to share a story with you. Do you remember hearing about a man who was, he was a rich man, but he was, he lived a very isolated life. He had a big mansion sort of house built in the woods, but he owned all those woods, the territory, everything. He was very seclusive. Come to find out, he was a serial killer.
Oh,
so what
okay.
happened, what, watch this. So by this time, my mom had already noticed I'm missing because my aunt, who was her sister, was at the Greyhound looking for me over a week ago. They said she never got the bus. They was like, my mama kept saying, yes, she did. She called the local police, the local Cincinnati police, and then called, and then they called Cleveland. They saw there was a ticket. They saw that I boarded it, but then I disappeared at the Greyhound. To make a long story short, after I was able to come to and everything, and they talked to me, they showed me these papers that I was missing. My mother and them had me missing and stuff. And and I told the police everything would happen. And then they said where they found this is a number of blessing. The police officer remember, of course, where he found me. It was at the woods. So they said, are you willing to drive back there? Do you think you can? And so I said, yes. So they took me back. And everything started flashing. I said, the house is down in here somewhere. So they brought their dogs and me. They were able to find my bloody footprints. And we followed the bloody footprints. Because remember when I went through the patio door glass and it broke? Well, I was all cut up, you know? To make a long story short, we get down there, they found the house. They called for more backup. All these police officers came down in there. Girl, they digged in this man's backyard, side yard, front yard, and found women's bodies. Then they went inside the house and found women bodies buried in the walls of the house. And they found women's body parts in jars and in the deep freezer of his basement.
Are you talking about Jeffrey Dahmer or something?
Everybody, every time I share this story, everybody said, was it Jeffrey Dahmer? No, it was not. But here's the thing.
Who the heck
thing.
Was it then?
Danny,
do you know
was,
any story like that?
Okay, watch this. It wasn't the man who, because another lady asked me, wait a minute, in Cleveland, was it that black guy who came out the military and he was doing drugs and he carried all those women? No, it was before all that. This happened in the 80s. So you can look up the serial killer that was in Cleveland in the 80s. When I told this story, nobody didn't believe me. And this lady, my daughter, got me to be able to get on a talk show. And they found the story. And it was like, and even the lady who was the host looked at me and said, I am not going to lie to you. I thought you were lying, but she's telling the truth. And they had me listed in the news, in Cleveland News, the one that got away. No, it was God's grace and mercy and favor. This is why I say now. I didn't know that then. You know what I'm saying? But this man is still in jail to this day. But I got pregnant. Watch this. Who is my second daughter? That's in my life today. You would never, if you look at us and our relationship, you would never think that she was a prodigy of rape, let alone I gave her for adoption because she looked just like me. But what I'm saying is how God had his, how he had his hand on her. When I thought that I was pregnant, now keep in mind, when they brought me back, because the police from Cleveland drove me home to Cincinnati and to my mom. And I had a nervous breakdown. They had to put me in the hospital, and then they kept me. I don't know how long I was there, but then they released me in my mom's care, and it was my mom and her church family who was there over me every day praying over me. I remember them hearing them say to the Lord, let her have her mind. Don't let the devil take her mind. I'm saying all this to say, all of a sudden, one day, I sat up in the bed, and I was in my right mind. And I said, Mommy, I'm going to go see Dad. She said, okay. She didn't say anything. I took a shower, put my clothes on. I went to go see my dad. And I caught the bus because my dad had a business downtown. Mm-hmm. And I'm going somewhere with this. And my dad, I went to his business. He had a stand. He was selling clothing, you know, clothing and jewelry and stuff. And one of his old Army buddies was down there. And so my dad said, Clyde, do you remember Michelle? And he said, this ain't your daughter, Michelle. His whole demeanor changed. Because, see, he remembered me when I was that little skinny Michelle. But he saw a beautiful woman in his eyes. And he looked at me. I promise, I felt like this man thought I was the most beautiful woman in the world. So he asked, so he said, no, so I said, he kept staring at me, so I was like, well, I'm getting ready to go, and my dad gave me some money. I said, I'm going to go back to Mom's house. And so he was like, oh, you're going to get on the bus? He was like, no. And then Clyde, his friend, said, I'll take you home or whatever. We never made it to my mom's house. This man took me, he just wanted to talk to me. He took me out to eat. He took me shopping. In 3 days, I had my own townhouse in a white neighborhood on top of the hill, driving one of his cars with a Mercedes-Benz, and he gave me a gold card. You know, back then, even now, you can't get no gold card. He gave me a gold card and a black card. So I was living this way. I just act like what happened to me didn't happen. And he was dating me. So to make a long story short, I didn't even know I was pregnant. We were dating for a couple of months, and I decided I'm going to give him some. So I went to Planned Parenthood. Right, to go get some birth control pills. And when I went in there and they took the test or whatever, the lady come in there and she said, I can't give you birth control pills. And I'm like, well, why not? And she goes, because you're pregnant. And that's all I remember. When I came to, I was handcuffed to their bed, to their whatever you call it, laying down on. And it was four police officers in there. And one looked at me all mad, talking about, why would you grab this bastard thing to try to stab your stomach? Talking about, take this monster out of me, take this monster out of me. So I was like, because I was raped. And so,
Michelle, hold on a second. There's 602 area code. I just want you to know that I'm with, I don't know who that is. 602 area code? Who am I speaking
to? Yes,
it's
me again. Pam.
Oh, okay. Hi, Pam.
I decided I'll probably just call in as often as I can just to, you know, listen, because I'm always listening to the recording, so I just figure I can just listen in person.
That's good. No, that's all right, honey. That's good. Michelle has quite a story here, so God's sake, it's getting late already. Go ahead. Finish your story.
Well, let me wrap this all up. I'll make a long story short. So I never had a stomach, so you would never know I was pregnant. The baby was being carried in my hips and my behind. And the God that I serve now, who I didn't serve then or didn't know then, he orchestrated so much. The dude I was with, my dad's friend, he had a good job. He had businesses. He had properties everywhere. But he was one of the number one top dope dealers in the state of Ohio. Cocaine. I was living like what's that cocaine? What's that one movie? I promise I can't think of the name of it. But
Scarface.
Scarface.
I said it.
Remember
Scarface.
He was sitting by his marble table, and he cut open a kilo and sniffed out the kilo, drinking his cognac in a glass, but that's how I was living.
Yeah, I know. I like that movie. Go ahead.
I didn't want for nothing. I was living a big life, and so I tried everything to kill this baby. I started so much cocaine. I drank so much alcohol. I fell down the steps. I paid crackheads to drop a TV on my stomach. and God would not let this baby die. You got to understand, back then in my mind, it was a monster. So I'm going to make a long story short. So one day he had to go to work. This was one particular day. He would go to work every day, but this one particular day, I was having labor pains. And when I say them pains hit, they were hitting. I act like it didn't happen. I was like, I was like, well, baby, go ahead and go. Yeah, he said, what's wrong with you? Oh, my stomach hurt. I got to use the bathroom. No, I was having freaking labor pains. And I wanted him to get the hell up out of there. So he left, and I called my sister because they knew I was pregnant. The only person who knew I was pregnant was my mom and my sister. And so my sister and them drove down here, came and got me, took me to the hospital. They didn't even get a chance to shave, nothing down there. She popped out. Well, we had a setup. Let me go back a little bit real quick. I was introduced to a nun who was in charge of the children's home. And she would come to my house and ring my doorbell, disturbing my peace from getting high. And she was like, look, if you stop doing cocaine, I will let you pick a family to raise your child. But you can't never say nothing. I stopped doing drugs so I can have this baby. I thought that I was pregnant when I was 6 months pregnant, and I had her in the 7 months. Look at God. I gave her up for adoption. Well, I met her in 2019. I'm sorry, 2009. We have a great relationship. So what was so horrible ended up being good. Ended up being good as far as having a relationship with her and having a relationship with all my other grandkids. That was a hell of a story. But now I give it to you because, Carol, it is now 9:21. So let me tell you this real quick. I want to thank everybody for listening. And just know, if no one didn't tell you that they love you, God loves you and I love you. And there are two scriptures. The first one is Jeremiah, the book of Jeremiah, chapter 29, verse 11 through 14, and Psalms 91. That's Jeremiah, chapter 29, verse 11 through 14. Psalms 91. I'm Michelle Bless, Minister Michelle Bless. My email, my phone number is on the website. Feel free to call if you need prayer, if you need someone to talk to, or just someone to listen. And thank you. That's been great. Go ahead, Carol.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm glad you were on tonight because my throat was bothering me, and I didn't have too much talking. Oh, my God.
Okay.
And I'm glad for that. That's all right. She told quite a story, quite several stories. But I want to get back really quick, okay, to those movies. Because listen here, we girls many times, I'm not saying the guys aren't taken advantage of because sometimes they are too. But many times we're taken advantage of. And especially being survivors, we don't know how to choose properly. I told someone that a few days ago. We don't know how to choose properly. So, you know, maybe these movies are good for all of us to look at. One is, just write it down, Blue Valentine, that's one. Gone Girl is another. Enough, which Michelle has already seen, is another. Closer is another. Story of Kaylee, K-A-L-E, Kaylee. And the last one is My King. And I can just picture what that one's about. He's a narcissist. I know it already. My King.
Powerful movie, Carol.
Yeah. Oh, you saw that one. You saw that one, too?
Powerful movies. I'm just saying, for anyone, if you think you're alone, all those movies Carol mentioned, and Carol, repeat them again so they can write it down. Look them movies up. They're free. Yes.
Yeah, they are free. Yeah, a lot of them are. Absolutely. One is called Blue Valentine. The next one is Gone Girl. And then Enough is the third one that you spoke about. Closer, Story of Kaylee, and My King. So there's five movies.
Gone Girl made me cry.
Well, I'm going to watch all these movies. And I have the type of remote. All I have to do is talk into it. And it'll go right to the movie, you know.
To say that Gone Girl would make you cry. It was very emotional for me. Gone Girl, that was tough to watch. That's all I got to say. Yeah.
Well, it's good for us to watch movies like that because so often we don't seem to have common sense, you know.
It's going
They're treating
to relate
us well.
To you.
Yeah, we'll probably all be able to relate to it. maybe we'll learn something from it. And then maybe mm-hmm. Annie will decide she wants to get married again. I don't know. I'm teasing. I'm only busting you.
No, Carrie, I don't want to get married again.
I don't know it yet.
I don't want to get married again either. It's, who wants to go through?
You don't get married again.
Look,
you don't know that yet.
Let me say something about that. I'm my own boss. I go to bed when I want. We all know I'm up all night. I do what I want. I go where I want. I don't have to answer to anybody. The only time I miss a guy is if my back itches and the wall isn't doing the job. I'm saying you're trying to, or you hear spooky sounds in the house because my house was built in 1950 and it's making weird noises. And so I stand there with my knife or my gun, and I figure, well, if someone comes in, pow, pow, okay? Sorry, but I don't want to be abused anymore. We have that right. So, you know, things like that, you know, it's nice to have a guy around. And, yes, at times I do get lonely, and I do go out. I do. But I don't want to get married again. No. Seen enough, been there, done that. That's the way that is. We had a wonderful show tonight. Thank you, Michelle. It didn't go the way that I had anticipated, but that's fine because everything you were talking about in the beginning was exactly what's written down here with the avoidance, you know, then they'll ignore you, the controlling mm-hmm. behavior, the dishonesty, you have feelings you can't trust your man, insecurity, mm-hmm. of course we have insecurity, codependency, hostility, intimidation, they try to intimidate us, don't they? Partner makes you feel devalued. Physical love is replaced by physical abuse. How many of us have gone mm-hmm. through that? And yeah. you justify yours or his actions. Now, unfortunately, there are women that do that. They can be a narcissist, where I think a lot of them are. They have too much aggression and victimization. Like you got handcuffed. I think that's victimized. I don't know. Abusive
Absolutely.
Behavior. Yeah, you bet. Signs when it's time to break up. I'll speak about that at another time. And then also the good signs, because we don't seem to understand what the good signs are in a relationship. Mm-hmm. We have trouble spotting them and seeing through, you know, the phony baloney and the actual good signs. And I have a lot written on that one. So maybe I'll use that one tomorrow night because tomorrow we're not going to have a guest, so...
I think you should talk about that tomorrow. That's going to be good, Carol.
Yeah, well, we have to, people have to understand what to look for. We've been trampled on so much, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Emotionally, physically, mentally, emotionally, just all the things, sexually, all the things that we talk about. And we have to want better for ourselves, and we have to learn how to spot those guys out
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes it's gals out there for guys. It's not just women, okay? Things can happen to men, too. When I lived at Red Bank,
yeah.
there's this guy talking to his broom on the porch. Poor
mm-hmm.
man.
Jesus.
And, what a story that one was. I don't know if any of those kids survived, I swear to God. But anyway, I got the 90-second
mm-hmm.
cue. Thank you very much, Michelle. That was very good. And, you know,
thank
unfortunately...
You.
You know, honey, you know we have all these terrible stories, but it's
tell
okay
them
to share them.
Tell about us on the website, how to reach us, Carol.
Well, you can go right to the contact page for one thing, okay? And that's right there on the front of the website, naasca.org. And you click on the contact page, and I'm at the top, the Night Owl, and Michelle's on there a few down. And there's a lot of other names there also. But you can know that Michelle and I are going to get back to you. Okay?
Yeah, you can definitely
and know, too,
sure.
that if you call in the a.m., I'm not out running the streets anymore in the a.m. I'm home. So I'm here.
So funny.
So, but anyway, thank you so much for everyone that called in. And for those of you that listened, unfortunately, you know, our stories are not that unique. It's terrible to say that.
Yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
unfortunately, that's what we go through. And I always say, we're still standing.
And
okay?
God loves you.
And God loves us. You bet.
Amen.
Okay, good
Amen.
Night now. Amen.
Good night.
We've got 8 seconds, so I got to close this up. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Have a good night.
Good night.
And be careful, everyone, all right? Okay.
Another tomorrow, because that dawn was gone. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, that's good.